In the first game of the Rays series, it was the pitching. But on Wednesday night, it was the hitting. Absolutely no offense as the Red Sox lose once again to the Tampa Bay Rays.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I want to welcome you back into the Locked On Red Sox podcast, and thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. I am your host, Massachusetts Pirates team insider and Woo Sox production assistant, Jake Mazuski, and here, as always, with my co-host, Nessens, Lauren Willand. And before we go into this recap, we're also going to be having on Cooper Boardman, who's the sideline reporter and broadcaster for the Woo Sox, as we continue to look forward to 2023 and what the future of the Red Sox looks like. But, you know, we got to see a little bit of the future of this team continue. You know, we've seen Wong, we've seen Cassis be able to make some impacts, but, you know, it was really nice to see the Red Sox, even though the offense didn't show up, Nick Pivetta have a great outing on the mound, and ultimately the bullpen was able to look nice as well.
Yeah. So overall, this is a winnable game for the Red Sox, but much like we've seen all season, this offense just really struggled in times that they needed to. But, you know, Nick Pivetta, I feel like he was working really, really slow tonight. He had a ton of full counts. His first 10 batters, he had 7 full counts. I don't know if it was just miscommunication with Connor Wong, and I don't know if it was just, you know, Connor Wong not calling the pitches he wanted, or if Nick Pivetta is still feeling the effects from the calf contusion. But, you know, he got through 5 or 6 innings. He didn't give up a hit till later in the game, but it just seemed like that both of these teams just kind of sleptwalked through the entire game.
And it was pretty crazy. Through 4 innings, both teams only had 2 hits.
Yeah.
And one of my friends was at the games, and I literally texted him like, "You couldn't have gone to a less offensive game than this one." And pretty crazy as well. You know, looking at Nick Pivetta going into, I believe it was the 6th inning or so. You know, especially with a guy who, you know, only allowed 1 to 2 hits going into that 6th inning, it was pretty crazy that he had 90 pitches up to that point. But I mean, sort of like you mentioned, filled up a lot of counts, had trouble a little bit with his control at the beginning of the game, but it was nice to see him have an effective outing, but really tough to not see the Red Sox come up in those critical situations when they had runners really in scoring position multiple times during this game.
They led the game off with a double. Kike Hernandez doubled. That was the perfect opportunity right there to just take a 1-0 lead. This game is totally different. They're probably still playing at 9:50 at night if they just did something. Even in the 9th inning, the 8th inning, they had those opportunities. And it's just so, it brings us back to April and May, and just when they could not for the life of them score with runners in scoring position and just move the runners. And that's how the Rays scored. They just moved the runners by putting the ball in the air, putting the ball in play. And the Red Sox just could not do that. And it's like watching a slow fire. Like, you know, it's just going to get bigger and worse, but you cannot take your eyes off it. But it's just what's gone wrong for the Red Sox all season, right? You get effective pitching, the offense can't do anything. You get effective offense, the pitching can't do anything. Like, there is just nothing that the pitching and the offense, I feel like, just have not been on the same page really much together all season, except for June when they won like 20 games in a month.
It's really crazy how, you know, as you mentioned, sometimes one part works out, sometimes the other doesn't work out. But, you know, as you mentioned, the Rays found creative ways to, you know, not only get on base, but be able to get that one singular run of the game. We saw Francisco Mejia break up the no-hitter with a double, and then we saw Taylor Walls single pass shortstop Kike Hernandez to ultimately score that run. And then we also saw Taylor Walls steal second base. And, you know, I really thought, honestly, that the Rays were going to continue to find creative ways to get runs in. And, you know, that's just what makes them so effective is, you know, not only on the pitching side are they so dominant, but on the hitting side, even though they don't have tons of power, and when you look at this lineup, you might not know every single name, they still find super creative ways to be able to get on base and continue the runners going. And, you know, especially when the Red Sox, as you mentioned, in that first inning, Kike Hernandez leadoff double. And also, you know, I forget what inning it was, but you know, Kike and Pham both got back-to-back singles to lead off, and they still couldn't get anything going. And you know, one of the biggest frustrations for me, it was one out, JD Martinez, it was first and third, and just a little dinky fly ball, and you couldn't even hit a sack fly to center field. And you know, obviously JD's power has been massively down throughout this season, but this is supposed to be one of our biggest and most powerful hitters in the lineup.
And this is what Alex Cora has harped on recently, and more so the last few weeks, that they need to stop playing desperate baseball and just try to put the ball in play. Go back to the simple things. Go back to just getting the ball in play and moving the runners. And I know that no one's harder on JD than JD himself, but these are times you need to come up big and you need to come in clutch and get these runs across. And yes, he's having a down year. You could make that case for many of the Red Sox players this year. And even though we can pretty much forget about the postseason, but you still want to win games. You don't want to be swept. They haven't been shut out since May 30th. And it's just, there was no signs of life from this Red Sox team, from really anyone, minus Kike Hernandez.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's been really nice to see Kike, you know, after he came back from his injury, really finding creative ways to get on base and also show why his recent extension wasn't a waste of money, and that he's going to be a key member of this Red Sox team in 2023. But as you mentioned, you know, you said it perfectly when we first started talking about the game. 10 runners left on base. And when I saw the lineup come out with no Devers and no Xander, I tweeted out, I said, you know, this is going to be interesting. Hopefully the rest of the offense can sort of find creative ways to score runs, get on base. And, you know, they still got on base, but it says it right in the numbers, you know, 10 runners left on base. And even with Devers and Bogey out of the lineup, you would still expect this team to score more than one run.
You would expect that. I mean, it's, you know, they knew yesterday that Xander Bogaerts was not going to play Wednesday. They knew that. And I'm assuming they knew that Devers wasn't going to play either, because it was just a rest day for him. They're certainly constructing this lineup and playing like they're not going to make postseason. They're not trying to risk any further injury to Bogaerts, that any further injury to Devers, and et cetera, et cetera. We can go down the list all day. But even without Bogaerts and Devers, we've seen this team be able to win games still. We've seen them been able to at least get one run on the board, and lifeless. And yes, it's a getaway day. They have the off day Thursday going into another AL East series, but maybe their minds were elsewhere. But you're going in being like, we don't want to get swept. Just try to salvage a win from this series.
Seriously. And, you know, the only, I guess, positive thing that has really come out from seeing the Rays win these games is seeing them creep up on the Yankees. You know, as much as, you know, it's tough to see the Red Sox lose, it's nice to see a team like the Yankees, who had such a big lead on first place, you know, kind of allowing the Rays to creep back in. Now, the Yankees are currently winning 4-1 as we're recording this, so the Rays won't be able to really gain too much ground from this win. But that's really the one positive that, I guess, comes out of this. And, you know, the other positive, I guess, as well is, you know, as I mentioned, the bullpen looked really good. You know, Schreiber, Strom, and Zach Kelly, all three of them only allowed two hits total over three innings. And it's really nice to see some of those guys be able to, you know, be shut down when this Rays lineup is still one of the best in the league.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to see probably more strikeouts from the bullpen. The three of them, there was only one, and that came from Schreiber. But beggars can't be choosers. You're going to take what you can with this bullpen if they're keeping the game close. I mean, they could have easily let that game get out of hand probably many times. That Rays lineup is very scary. But, you know, like I said, you take the good where you can get it. And Schreiber's been really, really good this year. He's been pretty reliable. Matt Strom as well. And Zach Kelly, you know, the eye test, you're like, oh my God, he's all over the place. But he's getting the outs, and he kept Wednesday's game close. So it's a good positive to see toward the end of the season, when there's not much to really kind of look forward to for the rest of the season. People just want to maybe get this team to 500, just finish the season at or above 500.
And really the only things left to look forward to is, you know, the possibility of the Red Sox locking up some of these players for 2023 and us starting to get excited about next season. You know, you didn't have the opportunity to give your reaction on this show to Kike Hernandez because, you know, something happened that you and I always get afraid that happens after we finish recording is that some news is going to break. And I think it was like an hour or two right after we finished recording, the news broke about Kike Hernandez signing a one-year extension for $10 million. But was curious on your thoughts on it, especially the $10 million figure.
Yeah, I think it's great for both sides. I think that, you know, Kike Hernandez alluded to that Chaim Bloom promise that this team would be better and that, you know, that's obviously making sure they lock up someone like Bogaerts. Your team gets a lot worse and you don't have him on your team and a potential non-replacement run on the horizon. So I'm glad he's back. He's very reliable. You can put him in center field. You can put him at second base. And ever since he got his hip problem and the hematoma taken care of, he's really just kind of come back into what we saw last year. And we know how much he struggled this year. And once he got everything figured out with his hip, he was able to get back to the Kike that Red Sox fans fell in love with. So I'm excited. It's a one-year deal, just a straight-up one-year deal. You know, there's no options. There's no incentives. So it's really good for both sides. And it keeps him in Boston for another year. It keeps a reliable glove in the outfield. We're not going to be watching Jaron Duran or, you know, RIP Jackie Bradley Jr. But, you know, we're going to have a solid outfield next year with Alex Verdugo. And then you put Kike Hernandez out there and then you figure out right field later. You can plug and play there.
Yeah, and that's what's nice about, you know, that security is now center field is sort of out of the mind of Red Sox fans that's a need to fill. And Kike Hernandez was very reliable in that position. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to see the bat going and he can rekindle sort of what we saw. Not so much in the playoffs because that was just legendary, but, you know, getting back to that, you know, 270, 15 home runs type of Kike Hernandez that we saw in 2021. But even though, you know, watching the Red Sox isn't super duper exciting right now, you can get excited about some things. Summer's winding down. The nights are getting longer, but the breeze isn't the only thing that's getting stiff. That's right. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, we all know that confidence can take you far in life, and that's especially true in the bedroom, especially when it's time to take a step up to the plate. That's where Blue Chew comes in. It's a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in this, chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. And you can take them anywhere, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever the opportunity arises. And the process is simple. Sign up at bluechew.com and a consultant will one of their licensed medical providers. And once you've been approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in the line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped directly to your door in a discreet package. So if you want to benefit from the extra confidence, it's time to perform. Chew it and do it. So we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's bluechew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to receive your first month free. Visit bluechew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. We are here with a very special guest. He's the broadcaster and sideline reporter for the Worcester Red Sox. We are here with Cooper Boardman. So how's it going, Cooper? It must be pretty interesting seeing a lot of these guys from Worcester now in the Red Sox lineup.
No doubt. First of all, thank you. Thank you both for having me. Big fans of the pod. It's been a heck of a year in Worcester. And I think, I'm sure this is something that you've talked about, but in the context of, you know, what's happened in Boston over the course, I feel like I've watched the Red Sox all year, honestly.
Yeah, seriously.
And I think my thing, I mean, we've seen everyone from Connor Wong, from Brian Baio to Tristan Casas. Finally, Red Sox fans have seen Tristan Casas, but Connor Wong there's been a lot of eyes on him. He was really strong after his injury. And on Wednesday, we saw him kind of struggle with Nick Pivetta. I don't know if it was communication. I don't know if it was the pitch calm. Pivetta was working a lot slower than he usually does, shaking off a lot of pitches, a lot of full counts. Is that just, you know, them trying to get used to each other, some communication there, and just Connor Wong getting more reps? Because Alex Cora said he's going to be catching Friday and Sunday.
Yeah, I think, and it's funny, like watching the Sox game, you know, kind of as the night went on, you saw that. My first reaction was almost like I was stunned by it in some ways, because that's not what it's been for Connor. I think that's more a reflection of those two guys getting on the same page and going from there. And I think, you know, watching Connor over the last couple of years, you know, he has become a very good offensive player at the AAA level, but the defense is the thing that has always just been so stringent. His pitch framing, the numbers, the metrics are great. The eye test, he passes, everything that he does defensively, throwing out runners and all of that. And, you know, talking with him, talking with the pitchers that work with him consistently, there are no issues. He's really good at what he does, and he's a really, really smart guy. I remember a converted infielder that came over, became a catcher, and has done that at a really high level. And it's also, you know, watching what he guys have said about him at the major league level, the relationship that he has with Nathan Eovaldi, the relationship that he has with a lot of these guys that have started in Worcester and made their way to the Boston side of things, where I think any blip on the radar is exactly that, just something small. And I would imagine that we will be talking for many years about Connor Wong being an excellent defensive catcher for the Boston Red Sox.
And I think if you get Chris Sale's approval, because Chris Sale's raved about Connor Wong and of all these people, if you get Chris Sale's approval, you're probably doing something right.
No doubt.
That's what I was just about to say. That's something that stuck out to me with Chris, is that he mentioned, you know, the attention to detail from Connor Wong was something that really stuck out to him. And that's been very impressive for me watching him defensively develop. And one thing that really caught my eye, and I think everybody in Red Sox Nation's eye, is his power surge over the last month or so. I believe it's 10 home runs between Worcester and the majors as well. But what difference have you seen from Connor Wong offensively, not only this season, but especially this past month?
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess it's kind of the question that everybody's asking in some ways about him, because not that he hasn't been capable of power, but we've not seen it quite like this. And I think I'm thinking back to a month ago. We were just talking about this on our pregame show the other day, which was, you look at all three of his slash lines, you know, batting average, on base, and slugging percentage coming into the year, or coming into the month, that was, batting average was 1,000 times better. On base percentage, a ton better. Walk percentage, strikeout percentage, all in the right direction between last year and this year. And the only thing that hadn't kind of, you know, taken the jump along with it was the slugging. It was the power. It was the only thing that had not well surpassed what his numbers were a year ago. So I argue that he is a much better hitter this year, just period, you know, from the perspective of taking pitches, of having patience, of using the entire field in a number of different ways. And so I almost think that this explosion over the last few weeks is almost regression in a good way, coming back to where things were supposed to be for him, because he had just made too many strides watching him every day not to have numbers that reflected that. And so I think, you know, that's part of it. And then the other part of it too, and you can kind of see it with your own eyes, Wu Sox fans have seen it, Red Sox fans will see it soon, I promise, is what he's done to the opposite field. He's not a big man. I mean, you're talking, you know, 6 foot, you know, under 200 pounds, but he has extraordinary power towards right center and right field. And when he gets something out over the plate, the way he's been locked in over the last few weeks, that is what has been most impressive. And I think that, of all of the things, when you're wondering, okay, how do you get consistent power at the big league level? How does power translate? That is the best sign of all, at least in my mind, for Connor Wong.
And he's been, you know, like you said, he's got that, all that kind of power. And it's funny that you say he's not a big guy. I'm 5'2", so 6 feet is like a giant to me. I mean, anyone above 5'5", and I'm like, that's a whole new world up there. But the other big boy, Tristan Casas, every time I see him, I'm just amazed at his size and that he's an athlete. And this guy can move really well at first base. And we've seen him, you know, we've seen the plate patience. We've seen the strikeouts. We've seen the struggles against lefties. But he just looks so poised. And it's not even his play at the plate or his play at first base. It's how he handles the media, because he's so young, but he acts like he is some 10-year veteran. And he's just so locked in. He's so respectful. And you would never know that he's only played in 3 MLB games.
I think, you know, so I'm just going through kind of social media in my head about Tristan Casas, right? You got the shirtless picture of him lying, yep, you know, on the field at Fenway and all that stuff. And Alex Gordon was joking about it. And you know, I think people like in this world that we live in the Twitter universe where everything is everywhere and what you do is on full display kind of at all moments, I think people don't buy that it's genuine in some way from Tristan. Like Tristan is Tristan at all moments. I have no doubt about that in my mind, just watching him interact with people, watching him be around, to your point, media, but also just people in general. And so like him lying on the field at Fenway with his shirt off is nothing more than Tristan doing what he does every single day. He just happens to be doing it with cameras watching this time. And I think that kind of epitomizes everything that you just said about him and the way he carries himself, the way he handles himself. In my mind, I've not met a AAA baseball player over the last couple of years in Worcester that's been more equipped to walk up to the major leagues and have mental success, because he's such a process-oriented person. And that's the thing. Like, he is just such a focus on, you know, the work that he does. And by the way, there's no reason to waver from that, because look at where he is. I mean, the work has absolutely paid off at every single level. And I really don't have a lot of doubt that that's going to happen at the major league level as well. But, you know, to what you said, like, that is who Tristan is.
You said it perfectly. And that's something, you know, we were joking about at the Woo Sox. You know, he was doing the same thing in Worcester, but, you know, people weren't taking pictures of it. And, you know, the Red Sox media was crazy. Yeah. Red Sox media was going crazy and making fun of him. What is this earth thing crap? But I think it's also really interesting as well. You know, when you talk to him and you interviewed him walking around the field, and, you know, if fans haven't checked that out yet, it's on the Worcester Red Sox YouTube channel. Cooper and Tristan did a great job of, you know, breaking down sort of not only Tristan as the person, but as the hitter. And one thing that I found fascinating is his focus on just getting on base. And, you know, even though he's a home run hitter, that doesn't define his approach at the plate. And I thought it was so fascinating seeing that, not only in his plate approach in the minors, but in the majors so far too.
Well, I think, you know, something he said in that video, right, is if I'm focused on slugging, I'm going to get too big. I'm not going to be able to stay within myself. If I focused on getting on base, I'm big enough where if I hit balls, they're going to go out of the ballpark. And that's been the case for him. One of the things he didn't say in the video, just kind of with talking with him, I asked him how he measures his success. And he got a lot of different answers to that question. I love that question. Like, there are guys who will be like, I'm going to tell you my WRC plus, and that's literally like what I'm focused on. And if that's like, if that's above league average, or it's the number that I want it to be at, I feel good. And Tristan's answer was a very simple answer. And it was, the only way I measure my success is if I'm swinging at good pitches, and that's it. And so take that and imagine the fact that that is in his mind in some capacity always. And now watch him play baseball, and it makes perfect sense. And I think that is the thing about him, you know, that is different than most of the players that we're talking about just in general, you know, that you talk about on this podcast, is that the focus is just about good pitch, I'm going to swing, and trust the swing decisions from there. And he's been able to do it. And that's, I think, the other thing too, that like we had no doubt would translate, because the strike zone is the same at AAA and it is at the major league level. It's just about your internal discipline. And as we've talked about, he's got tons of that too.
And I think the Red Sox already have a ton of trust in him. I mean, even before Franchi's injury on Tuesday, they didn't have a lot of options at first base with Eric Hosmer on the IL, Bobby Dalbec struggling and Franchi struggling to play that position. So I think it said a lot that they sent down Bobby Dalbec to Worcester, and they're like, and Cora was like, yeah, we're going to play him pretty much every day so he gets his reps. I think that speaks volumes to how they already see him as part of this future, not just this year, but obviously long-term down the road.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And I think, you know, in the minds of everybody who has watched Tristan Casas, you know, over the last few years, and Red Sox fans who have maybe only seen him for a few days, that the hope is he's going to be that guy at first base. And certainly, you know, you don't know if that's going to work out. You know, we can't sit here and possibly prognosticate what that's going to look like. But I can say this, just having watched him, you know, in September, he comes up, first AAA game, he strikes out against Cade Cavalli. He's one of the best prospects in the Nationals organization. Guy throws 100, all that. Strikes out, I think it was three pitches, maybe four. And he comes up in his second at bat, AAA game. I've talked to him, Tristan, that is, about it a long time ago. And he was like, I remember being really nervous in that second at bat, like big deal for me. And of course, this is a guy who, like, when you look at him, he could be walking down the beach in Malibu. Like, it just doesn't look like anything fazes him. And he got down, I think, 0-2 in the second at bat after striking out in the first at bat. He sees a ball and he said, I just needed to see one ball and that would kind of get me back to where I wanted to be. Takes two more, gets the 3-2, takes a pitch out, opposite field home run, first AAA home run. You know, the rest is kind of history. And so, you know, those are the little moments, just watching him and getting the chance to see him, where you say, okay, you know, this is a little bit different. And so when you talk about why the Red Sox are so excited and why Red Sox fans are so excited, you know, that is probably the best example I can give as to why, and one that is actually based in reality.
And, you know, we saw it all throughout, especially after the time that he came back from his ankle injury, you know, being able to really come out of a little bit of a slump when he first came back and find ways to, you know, continue to get better and get better. But honestly, I've never heard that word, procrastinate. I'm gonna have to, like, write that down in my vocab to, like, pull it out of my pocket sometimes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I gotta know how to spell it too. I gotta tell you, sometimes on the broadcast, you take some words out that I've never heard in my life, and I try to, like, say it to myself and repeat it. I'm like, I gotta bring that back up sometime, because then, you know, when I say it, people will be like, wow, that kid's so smart. Another move that happened today is Ibrahim Almonte getting selected by the Red Sox as Francisco Cordero was put on the 60-day IL. And that was not too much of a surprise to me. I was hoping that he got an opportunity, especially with how consistent he's been since being traded over to the Red Sox. In my opinion, he's been one of the most disciplined hitters in that Woo Sox lineup since getting traded over. But I was curious on your impression of him.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, first thing is, you know, prayers to Franchi. Hope he's going to be all right. One of our favorites in Worcester. But yeah, it's awesome to see Abraham get the opportunity. And I think, you know, when you look at him statistically, he has been the Woo Sox best hitter since he came. I mean, just in terms of results purely, he is the league leader in slugging percentage in the International League. I mean, that is like just period right there. That, you know, you think about all the prospects, all the people, he is the league leader in slugging. And so, you know, that itself kind of shows you what he's done. He's a professional hitter. He's done it at a major league level before. And, you know, it's, I guess, from the Red Sox perspective, it's kind of the perfect storm where they don't want Dolbeck to come up and not play. They don't want Duran to come up and not play. So, you know, you give Almonte the opportunity and I hope he gets, you know, significant time. We'll see exactly how that all works out. You know, I think the combination of on-base that he brings, then obviously the power numbers that we just talked about, his eye, his, you know, the discipline, defensive ability, speed, power, he checks all the boxes. He's an older player, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way, just to have a good understanding. And then beyond everything else, he's a great dude. I mean, he was an instant kind of walk in to the clubhouse and change the mojo and the vibe of the clubhouse. Like, that's legitimate. I don't, you know, care kind of what level you're at or where you are in a season or whatever it is. But, you know, when you have somebody who is relentlessly positive in the way that Ibrahim Almonte is, just being near him, whether you speak to him or not, you have an understanding. This is a completely different guy. And, you know, maybe that'll be a good thing for a clubhouse. I don't know. But what I do know is that if he does get in the game, he has the ability to hit a ball a very, very long way. Always.
The Red Sox could really use some of that right now, especially after Wednesday's loss. But is there a prospect in Worcester that maybe Red Sox fans should have their eyes on, whether it's a later call up later this season or next year?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. The easy answer, and is the honestly the correct answer, is Manuel Valdez, who came over in the Christian Vasquez deal and has had just a really interesting, you know, month or so, or just over now, you know, with the Woo Sox, where he came in and he set the world on fire. Then he had some struggles for, you know, the better part of a series or so. Remember their 6-game series at AAA, and then turns around and has now really started to get hot. And I think there are kind of a few ways this breaks down. The first is the hitting, and the hitting is very impressive. He's got opposite field power, somebody who's, you know, less than 23 years old on this earth to have that ability, to have the plate discipline that he has. He walks a ton. He has a very good idea of the strike zone. It is Casas-esque in some ways. I wouldn't necessarily take it that far, but it is certainly something that like is a huge part of his game. So you take all of those things, and when, you know, so a guy gets traded, right? And we're trying to figure out who this is that we're getting here. And Worcester, one of the things you sit down, you read the prospect rankings, whatever, is that his defense is the thing where like they don't really know where they're going to play him, or they don't necessarily know what he brings to the table on a day-to-day basis. I've been really impressed with his defense at second base. He's played a good defensive second base, you know, play here or play there, but you know, certainly it's not a hole in his game the way I think, you know, there's some guys where, you know, you read that and says the defense isn't there. Then you watch him every day and you say, oh, okay, I really understand that. It's not been that way for him. And so if he continues to progress, you're not going to see, I mean, I don't make the decisions, but I would imagine you're probably not going to see him in Boston in 2022, but he's shown everything he needs to do to be someone that is absolutely in consideration for a Boston Red Sox future.
Especially what he did on Sunday, coming just a single away from the cycle. And, you know, that's one thing that, you know, has really impressed me is his adversity overcoming, some struggles. And, even when he was struggling, still had a really good eye at the plate. And, there was some plays where I was like, holy crap. Like you said, like his defense was the weakness. And, you know, we've seen him make some really nice plays over there at second base. But, you know, one thing that I've noticed is that he's always got a smile on his face, got a real great personality. So I'm curious on what you've seen from him in the clubhouse, you know, in the dugout, and you know, what sort of energy he's brought to this Woo Sox team.
Yeah. I just asked him like, what's it like to be here? And the first thing that came out of his mouth was about the major league guys on the team, talking about, you know, being around Abraham Almonte, being around Franchi Cordero, being around all of these guys. And you know, it's cliche to say, you just want to see them soak it all in. You want them to get all the information that they can from the guys that have been there before and all of that. But it's the case, and it's what he does. And the reason why it's cliche is because you need to do it in some ways. And he's done that, I think, just kind of watching him and seeing his development. And, never stop working. I think, he's got this very torqued up swing. Apologies for my rendition of it. But like very torqued up, where he's got his inside shoulder very in. And one of the things that Woo Sox manager Chad Tracy was talking about is sometimes he can get like almost too wound up. And that was some of his struggles. And then, you know, he's kind of, for lack of a better term, unwinded in some ways over the last couple of weeks. And you've started to see what you saw on Sunday and what he's done. But I think that is an example of a 22-year-old who doesn't act like one. You know, a 22-year-old who can make adjustments on the fly. You know how hard it is to make an adjustment at AAA at that age? There are so many guys you watch try to do it and can't. And so to see him, not so much the individual technical adjustment of that, but the ability to make that change. Because when you get to the big league level, you know, that has to be able to be done, you know, on the fly. There's no time for a growing pains process. And he's been able to do it. It's been really impressive.
It kind of reminds me, when you say that he can make those adjustments on the fly, that every scouting report I've read, everything you hear about Marcelo Meyer, that he just has this awareness of the game that he probably shouldn't have at 19 years old, but he's able to just see the game and hear the game and make any adjustments, which gives me a lot of hope for him for the future. I still believe he's years out, but just to be able to do that, like you said, on the fly, I just think speaks to the maturity of somebody and their willingness to be like, okay, this isn't working. I need to fix this immediately. So I'm not going to do that again, but let's do trial and error from here on out and see what works.
And I think it's a two-way street with that, right? You need the guys in the organization that are going to be able to do that mentally, but you also need an organization to allow those guys to do it. And I think, you know, just being around the coaching staff in Worcester, from, you know, a first year AAA manager and Chad Tracy, who, you know, these guys listen to in a big time way. You know, you talk about Rich Gedman as a hitting coach, Paul Abbott, and that entire pitching staff and the coordination that goes along with it. And there are countless other, you know, names that are a huge, huge part of it. And, you know, to be honest, I'm only seeing one of the levels of it on a day-to-day basis at AAA, but there is an investment in the minor league product. And I don't mean that the output and the games you're watching necessarily, although that's part of it, but there's an investment in the quality of these guys and their development. And it's a really fun thing to see. And I think you've seen it, you know, I know it's not been the season that Red Sox fans, you know, have wanted it to be, and that's understandable, but to see the guys go up there and that have had the success that they've had and the mm-hmm. success that, you know, I think some of these, you know, especially last few guys in September are going to have is an extraordinary thing. And there aren't that many organizations that are capable of doing that.
Couldn't agree more. And, you know, that's been so exciting to see, you know, lots of these guys be able to develop and flourish. And, you know, it's nice that that professionalism is there for, you know, guys like Bobby Dalbec, Jaron Duran, who are looking to get back up to that major league level. But really appreciate you coming on, Cooper, and giving your insight. Really interesting to hear from your insider perspective. And for anybody that wants to follow you either on Twitter or support you in any way, how can they do that?
Yeah, Cooper K. Boardman on Twitter. My DMs are not open.
Still try to slide in. Just kidding. But really appreciate you coming on, my man.
No, thank you both for having me. This is awesome. And I'm happy to be back anytime.
Perfect, man. That's what we love to hear.
We hope that you did enjoy this episode and, you know, not only got some insight from our game recap, but also some insight from Cooper Boardman and got a little bit more excited about this Red Sox future going into 2023. It was really interesting to hear, you know, not only his thoughts on, you know, Tristan Cassis, Abraham Almonte, but, you know, also a guy like Manuel Valdez. But we're going to be continuing to try and get you excited about this Red Sox team, even though, you know, the playoff chances are slim. We're going to keep on bringing our energy and our personality to each and every single episode. So if you have not yet, make sure to subscribe on whatever audio platform that you listen to. Also over on YouTube, you can also follow us over on Twitter. It's LO_Red Sox. Myself on Twitter, it's at Jake Iggy. And also Lauren, it's La La La, three laws, Lauren with four R's. And we want to thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. Now make your second listen and go and check out the Ultimate Pro Football Preview 2022. It's an 8-episode extravaganza to get you ready for the NFL season. The local team experts of the Locked On Podcast Network, plus a betting angle from Lee Sterling of Locked On Bets, all combining into one ultimate NFL preview. Search for Ultimate Pro Football Preview 2022 on your Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcast. But we'll end this episode how we always end it. Let's go Sox. Peace.